Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day.
I feel so cooped up in this place.
Okay, but remember, serpentine!
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 Could you repeat that last part?
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
And away we go. We're going to talk about sex, including coming up later this hour, the $115 million that was handed over to Hulk Hogan today in his lawsuit against Gawker for the sex tape. Oh my God. For screwing around with his best friend's wife? We should all be so fortunate. I welcome my next guest. It's Dr. And boy, Dr. Nicole Prowse. I don't know if you have any opinion on that, but what an outcome for a sex tape.
That sounds tremendous. I don't know anything about the specifics of the case,
but
revenge porn is certainly moving up in our social salience, to be sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing that the media needs to be careful with from now on. So this is very interesting. Dr. Nicole Prowse is my guest, and she is going to dispel a lot of things. And I watched your ex-TED Talk, and I loved it. And you dispel a lot of things. I mean, for instance, sexual addiction.
Absolutely. People use that word like it's already completed and done and known, and it's not actually even a diagnosis that anyone's allowed to use, and the science behind it is quite poor. So we're doing work trying to communicate some of our science to the public so they understand what is and isn't real in the science world.
Okay, well, let's talk about that because, you know, it seems to me, and I know that you've taken some heat on this, because people think that hypersexuality or sexual addiction is a thing. So how do you dispel that?
Well, clearly some people watch so much porn that they should probably watch less. You know, I don't think anyone's disputing the fact that there are people who in this world who could cut back and who feel bad about their use. But what we call it matters. You know, that determines how they get help or don't get help and how we proceed. And this word addiction is just such an easy fallback, I think, for people. You know, we say, oh, I'm addicted to chocolate, I'm addicted to this. But in science, it has a very specific meaning. And sexual behaviors and porn consumption don't meet that meaning. It's not an addiction. It may be something else, and we're working on that, trying to understand what exactly it might be.
And so tell everybody how you came to that conclusion medically.
Sure. So there are a number of different things that, if it's an addiction, should be true. So, for example, the brain should be more responsive when someone who says they have a pornography addiction problem sees a sexual image, and it's actually less responsive when we tested it using electroencephalography. We also looked at their ability to regulate their sexual feelings. So people who claim to have porn addiction should be less able to regulate their sexual arousal when they're viewing a film. They're actually better able to. That is, they had probably more experience with it and were good at doing that. And finally, there should be negative consequences. And one of the most common people claim is that they have erectile failure with their real-life partners because they watch so much porn. And we looked at that in the lab as well. And people who report having porn problems actually don't have any erectile problems with their partners, and many labs have replicated that finding. So we're just not finding any evidence for addiction models of porn and sex.
Now, you know, I think this is probably where you get a lot of disagreements, where people say, you know, my partner's watching too much pornography and therefore they don't want me sexually. And you know, and it's that age old thing. Oh, well, you're masturbating too much or this, that or the other. And you're not having any time for me. So you're saying that's not really a thing.
It could very well be a relationship problem. Sounds like something that should be in counseling for.
Right.
But it's not an addiction.
It's not an addiction. So why do people think that it is? And why do people want to classify it? Because, you know, there was a celebrity, it's not top of mind right now, but who just went away. I don't know what kind of camp this is, But, you know, a sexual addiction camp or for therapy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We actually called a number of those camps and just straight out, you know, we didn't misrepresent who we were. We just said, how much does it cost to go to your treatment facility? And these are profoundly expensive inpatient treatments. So I think part of the reason it's such a commonly used term is there is a tremendous financial pressure for those who are making money off of it. They need it to be a real thing to be able to offer their services.
Boy, I'm glad you're dispelling this because it reminds me of the, gay camp, which was horrific.
There's a lot of overlap, and some people have started challenging some of the sex addiction therapists. Certainly not all of them, but some of them say that being gay is a sex addiction. And that's just another way of potentially using reparative therapy and framing it as a sex addiction. Oh, we're going to help you be not gay because you're just addicted to sex. And that's, of course, wrong.
Absurd.
So we're working to try and stop the providers that are doing that.
We're speaking with Dr. Nicole Prowse. So back to this therapy thing, what do they do to desensitize? I'm sure that's what they're trying to do, desensitize these people who are sent to these therapy sex addiction camps or whatever they are.
I have seen a couple of the treatment programs that they're using, but certainly not all of them. I think they're wide and varied in terms of their approaches. But for example, most of them have kind of an education piece they start with. And the two that I saw both provided false information to patients. They made statements like sex is 24 times as addicting as cocaine, and there's no evidence for that.
Right, because you look at the brain, if you look at the brain, I saw something today that were talking about the horrors of stroke with cocaine use, and that was a big story today. And they were showing those images of the brain, the MRIs, how it lights up bright red. And so, that's an obvious problem there, or you can see what's going on in the brain and where the possibility of stroke would be and what happens with the brain. So none of this is happening at all in your reality and in your studies.
So it's certainly the case that sex is a reward, and porn also activates some of those reward areas. But what people tend to overlook is anything that's rewarding does that. So if you eat chocolate, if you see pictures of chocolate, if you in fact, look at two types of chocolate, and let's say you love Leonidas, but not so much Nestle, your brain reward areas respond more strongly to the Leonidas chocolate. So the fact that your brain's responding more strongly to something that it likes or craves is not by itself evidence of addiction, but people reinforce that and misinterpret the neuroscience because they don't understand it. You know, just all reward means is, hey, brain, remember that. Learned it. We need to be here to see that thing or to eat that thing because we like it. And, the dopamine and the reward activation by itself is not good evidence of addiction.
Okay. 808-0810 is the number if you have any questions or you have any thoughts on this. 808-0810 is the number. And now we're speaking with Dr. Nicole Prowse. And when we come back, I want to talk about, I find this very interesting. We're going to talk about asexuals. And she believes, you believe that it is such a thing.
There are definitely people who identify that way, for sure.
All right, let's take a break and we'll be back. We'll continue our thoughts and our conversation at KGO 810 in just a minute.
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
We're Drexing you up and sexing you up for a Friday night. Why not? You're listening to Drex Radio Show live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. My guest is Dr. Nicole Prowse, and we're talking about sexual addiction. Is it real or not? And she says it's not, so we're going to run with that. And Libro Center is the name, or LibroCenter.com is her website, and you can follow her at Nicole Prowse, Nicole R. Prowse, P-R-A-U-S-E on Twitter. And we'll have all of that logged in at KGORadio.com. All right, Dr. Nicole. So let's talk about asexuality.
Sure. That was an unexpected study. I just study sexual motivation and especially low desire in women, much more common in women and a common complaint, and was interested in trying to understand what the difference was between people who had low desire and people who had no desire. So when I went to try and look up what asexual, how they worked, I found that there was nothing published on them yet. So we ended up doing the first direct study of asexuals in the world. And it was a questionnaire where we tried to understand how people are using that term. And There has been much more work done since ours, but found about half the people we surveyed were using asexuality as a sexual orientation. That's how they would describe themselves. And many of them, you know, described basically an absence of sex drive, but they weren't particularly inhibited. You know, these aren't people who seem to be scared of sex or have had very negative experiences. They just don't have a lot of drive for it.
Okay, so it's not as though something's physically wrong with them. They just don't desire sex. Or is there something physically going on or mentally?
No, so that's, people have followed up on that since our work, and there hasn't been any good evidence to suggest, for instance, that they're depressed, you know, or have some terrible trauma history that's suppressed their drive. These are just folks who, you know, if you can imagine, there are people who are on the high end, it makes sense. There are probably some on the low end, too. So viva la difference. It's human variability.
Right. And I'm glad that you studied this, because I'm sure that this rings a bell with a lot of people, you know, where they find themselves, if they are honest, they find themselves being asexual. But it's one of those things that you really, you know, I mean, it used to be, well, gay was foreboden. But I think you're right. Why not? I think it is something that probably, as I said, some people think, well, you know, that's just the way I am and I'm fine with it.
It's been fascinating watching that community become more visible. So they have the Asexuality Visibility Education Network, or AVEN,
sure.
Online, I think is probably their most popular center for those folks if you're interested in reading more about it. But because they are not engaging sexually, I was very curious to see over the years kind of how, like, the church would respond to them, conservative
right.
groups.
Would
whether
they
or not
care?
They would be integrated into the GLBT community. And, yeah, it's been
right.
an interesting following them. So
yeah, fantastic. Okay, let's talk about your data on climaxing, men versus women.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, men versus women.
Yes, they both do.
Well, they both do, but there's, you differentiate, right? Especially, yes.
So it's there are a number of differences between men and women. It's certainly the case that men orgasm much more consistently with intercourse, whether it's with a new partner or a regular partner. For women, it's much more variable. Even with a regular partner, they're, you know, about 65% of occasions or so. And with a new partner, forget it. Just don't even hope is
right.
Maybe one way to think about it. And physiologically, the orgasm looks similar in men and women. That is, they have the same kind of contractions. You can find evidence for both in the, if you monitor the butt muscles, basically, the anal contractions. But we found in our initial studies that some of the women were reporting having an orgasm when they actually weren't having these contractions, and men never did. Was it? They said they were having one, by God, they were having one. We could see the contractions in our measures. So now we're trying to understand what that means. You know, the women had no reason to fake it in our lab. They might with you, but not in the lab.
Right, exactly.
So we're trying to figure out why some women think they're having this experience when, in fact, from a physiological standpoint, they're not. And that's never been seen before, so we're not sure.
Well, I think one of the interesting things that I found in your study is where you talk about the orgasm as being, you know, compared to a decongestant.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Many people have speculated about, you know, why do we even have orgasms, especially for women? Like, guys, you know, the ejaculation orgasm don't have to co-occur, but they usually do. You know, it's rare that they separate. But we wouldn't have to have that, right? You could just ejaculate without having this pleasure sensation. But especially in women, why do women have it? Like, what does that have to do with anything? So people have investigated things like uterine upsuck theory, this idea that an orgasm would cause the uterus to dip into the seminal pool that would suck the sperm up in, you know, and increase the likelihood of fertility. That does not seem to be the case. A couple of studies have looked at that now. And so the question remains kind of, what is the function of that? And usually we think of it as a big reward that comes at the end, and maybe it's kind of reinforcing sex behavior, like it gives us some incentive to do all that stuff. But we actually are not finding strong reward signals at orgasm in the brain. And if that's true, then it may mean that it's all of the high arousal that leads up to it that's very reinforcing. And then the orgasm itself, one thing it is good at, those contractions, is pushing blood back out of the genital area. So, you know, we become very congested in our genitals when we get aroused, and it may just be pushing that blood back out.
It's very interesting. And when you, with your study with this, and then you kind of cap it off with the no, really, I'm fine. So that it, and you did, am I right about that? I mean, because usually that's like one of the big white lies that we all tell. No, really, I'm fine. But people can be fine with it.
Absolutely. And I think that is part of the message, is to really listen to your partner. And if they are saying, you know, really, tonight, I don't need anything more, I am telling you that I am good, believe them. There's a good physical reason to think that, you know, they have truly enjoyed themselves, that orgasm might not add anything more to what they've experienced. So you really kind of have to go by their report.
And I think that this is an incredible study that you've done. UCLA did a story on this, science and technology. It all falls within that realm. And I appreciate you so much for joining us once again. And again, I want to mention your website is LibroCenter.com. We will link it at KGORadio.com. And I thank you for the great conversation. So again, sexual addiction, if you missed the beginning of this conversation, this chat, is not a thing. I mean, it's not a mental state. It's not a mental dysfunction. So we'll leave it at that. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the chat.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll get to the Late Night Late Show wrap-up. We'll talk about the Comic-Con and, oh, my God, Hulk Hogan awarded $115 million, speaking of sex, for the airing or streaming of, you know, the sex tape that was leaked. It's just an amazing story. It's mind-boggling how a jury could award him $115 million. We'll talk about it next on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10.
It's a different kind of talk. The Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10.
Can you feel the madness descending upon us? I didn't have time to fill out a bracket this year, so I just ate a $10 bill. This is an exciting time of the year, whether you love basketball or you just like learning the names of colleges you've never heard of. They say March Madness will cost employers in the United States $4 billion in lost productivity, which, you know, they do this study or whatever it is every year, and it's stupid because they're making the assumption that if employees weren't watching the games and tallying up their brackets, they'd be working, which, if you've ever been in an office, you know could not be farther from the truth. If we weren't filling out brackets, we would be on Facebook.
And isn't that the truth? All right, and away we go. March Madness in effect. Around the world, I have to tell you. So, you know, I'm not really knowledgeable about these things myself. So anytime I fill out a bracket, and I didn't this year, and I guess if I would have, I'd have been already thrown
out.
Yeah, I'd be screwed already if I would have.
Just like everyone else.
Right. It seems that way. Well, first of all, so they gave me the odds yesterday. It's 1 in 9.2 quintillion. Are your odds. Quintillion now. So your chances of winning Mega Millions twice in a row. You know, you have better odds of winning Mega Millions twice in a row. So these are the odds are against you. All right. Ryan Hilton is with me, and we're going to talk about some of the madness that is going on. So today
was a big upset for me. One of my favorite, because I grew up in the East Bay, Cal.
Right.
Cal's, what were they ranked? Number... They were ranked so far up there, and they play Hawaii.
Hawaii, right.
Out of all places in the, just killed me how bad they.
Well, the guy with the broken hand.
They were missing two of their top scorers.
Right, okay,
that doesn't help at all. And then they had a situation.
Yes, the situation.
Their situation with their one of the coaches, and I don't know. That just kind of puts a damper on the Cal season because they played so well this year, and just
for sure,
just kind of sad.
Yeah.
And then the other one that many people probably had like at the top and probably winning the whole thing is the loss of Michigan State to Middle Tennessee.
That was, yes, Middle Tennessee. So just to what Jimmy Kimmel was talking about.
That's what
about.
I was just
right.
going to say,
yeah,
Jimmy Kimmel.
Right. These places
I don't even know some of these.
Of.
And the usually like every year I kind of have a feeling of like I know the colleges. I know who's going to play. I kind of have a feeling when I'm like filling out my bracket. But this year I'm looking at some of these colleges and I'm like, who and where are these colleges from? And then that's how I felt. Like I just found out about these random colleges that I've never heard of in my life.
Yeah. So, and by the way, if I would have filled out a bracket, I would have picked Kansas to win it all. But Kansas did beat Austin today. Connecticut beat Colorado. I'm just looking here.
I mean, those are colleges that you probably heard of too.
Oh, right.
So
right.
It's kind of makes sense.
Maryland over South Dakota State. As you mentioned, Hawaii beat the Bears. Unfortunately, Wichita State. One over Arizona. Miami beat Buffalo. Iowa beat Temple. And it was Villanova over UNC Asheville. Okay, so that means the next thing is, let me see, Kansas will take on UConn, University of Connecticut, Maryland versus Hawaii, Wichita versus Miami, and Iowa versus Villanova.
And that, you know, another cool thing about college sports, too, it's not like how if you watch the Warriors or something, you know, the Warriors are probably going to win.
Right. I mean, when Paul Rogers just announced the score, I thought, well, of course they did.
Of course
right.
they won. Of course they won. But with these college games, like even what just happened today with like Michigan State and Middle Tennessee, I mean, everyone probably thought, okay, Michigan State's going to win. I mean, that's what's going to happen. But boom, and all these upsets, that's one cool thing about
that's what
sports.
Makes it fun. Yeah, I love college sports, and I don't follow basketball, and I really need to get with the program.
They need to do this bracket thing with other sports, too. I like how
because
even though it might take you away from work a little bit, but it kind of...
Oh, who cares? It's again, what Kimmel said, nobody's
everyone's
paying attention.
Facebook. Everyone's on Facebook anyway. But this is cool how they did it, how a bracket works and everything, and how like you get all these no-name colleges together and just put it all into one bracket and see what it all comes down to. And one game loss, and you're out of it.
Right, you're done. So there goes eat your $10. How much are you out?
That's $100.
$100. Okay. Well, you know, that's life. By the way, yesterday Yale beat Baylor, and that was a huge upset. Somehow they managed to out-rebound Baylor 36-32 and won the game with a score of 79-75. Afterwards, a reporter asked Baylor player Tareen Prince about the rebound issue, and he gave a smart aleck response.
They had more rebounds.
You said he got out-rebounded. I was surprised. You did. 36-32. How does Yale out-rebound Baylor?
You go up and grab the ball off the rim when it comes off, and then you grab it with two hands, and you come down with it, and that's considered a rebound. So they got more of those than we did.
Any more questions for the student-athletes?
Yeah. That sounds like something I would say to my dad if he's like, if he's mad at me or
You know how I miss through all of this? It's a Bobby Knight.
You miss him throwing a chair into
the chairs. Yeah. I mean, we have something close. Who is the dude with the sweaty dude?
Oh, Sean, the coach of Arizona.
Wait till you see this meme floating around. It's just fantastic. Yeah, we should put it up. We have to post it at Generation.
I'll post it up right now.
Okay, at Generation Drex. You can follow me on Twitter. But so this dude, he's got this like sweating thing going on. So he has a white, a white shirt and a tie on. Okay, a white dress shirt. And I mean, he's not like doing Marco Rubio sweat. Marco Polo. He's doing Marco Polo because he looked like he was dipped in the tank. I mean, it's serious.
It looks like they poured the Gatorade like on top.
Water boy.
Right on top of him.
Everybody took a leak on him or something. I don't know. What the hell?
But then at halftime, he went out and changed his shirt and everything. I don't know how he... You would think if you are that sweaty, if you knew this already, you wouldn't wear a white shirt, I guess. I know.
Well, and you know, with the white shirt, then it looked like he was shirtless because you could see through it. You know, it becomes transparent. The guy probably has a condition, but boy, he talk about need to get some Botox under the underarms. That would be your first clue.
It just looks a little interesting.
Under Armour. Yeah, or something, man. Oh, my God. Yeah, and people are relentless on the on social media, on Twitter with this. It's just amazing. So what does it say here? Managers have gone to Arizona Hotel to get Sean Miller another dress shirt.
Oh, they had to go to the hotel. Oh, my goodness.
It's happening again. Poor guy. All right. Well, all things fun with this social media and the internet. Hey, speaking of fun, a lot of things going on fun in the South Bay. Comic-Con is happening, and Steve Wozniak, the Woz, is going there. And he's going where, many have gone before, but creating yet another Comic-Con in this crowded fanboy universe. He believes that the tech icon believes that, we're going to have the home team advantage here. And I love it because, the Woz is doing it in San Jose and at this 3-day event where we're expecting 30,000 people. They're going to have Brainiac topics and panels. They'll talk about the nature of black holes, the quantum realm, life on Mars, new technology will be on display. They're going to have a virtual reality zone and App Valley. And Wozniak said, he'll be able to beam up the Super Babies versus Al panel and delve into the issues of designer babies, AI, and the threats they may pose to humanity itself, which we were talking about last night. So it's all good. Check it out if you're looking for something fun to do, if you can get in there with all the crazies. I mean, it used to be a freaky thing where I just thought it was like the Furbies would show up. You know what I'm saying? You didn't want to wander into that black hole. But, you know, it's now, it's so cool. So can't wait to go. All right, we're going to take a break and we'll be back. We're going to talk about the Hulk Hogan lawsuit and $115 million this dude won today. That's next on KGO 810.
Resch, live and local. He's talking about the things you talk about every day. It's the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Here's Hulk Hogan 6 years ago.
Everything was a fight for me. I lost my family financially. I got destroyed. And everything I ever saved, I lost because of a bunch of situations, you know. Even though the divorce is over, it's like the gift that keeps on giving. Now I'm not a millionaire now, that's for sure.
Kaboom! And funny how things and times change. Talk about a leg drop. Hulk Hogan didn't only win with his war against Gawker today, he ran away with it. The WWE legend taking $115 million legendary judgment, that's for sure. Anthony Tall is my guest. He's a sports agent and criminal defense attorney in L.A. and New York. Anthony, thanks for joining me.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Nobody's doing as well as Hulk Hogan over a damn sex tape, I have to tell you. You got to be kidding me, man.
That's true. Well, you know, this is one of those cases where the jury decided that even though he's a public figure, the idea that you could go inside of the private bedroom and that could go out to basically millions of viewers, that violated his privacy. And they wanted to send a clear message, I think, here. That, you know, if you violate privacy, even if it's a celebrity in their own private space, then we're going to punish you. You know, there's two ways to look at it. The first way is what the Gawker basically argued that, hey, you know, this guy has made an image out of basically his sex life, his muscles and things like that. So it's all open free game.
Right. But well, I mean, go ahead. I was just going to say Gawker was horrible with the defense on this, but.
Yeah, they were, and that's what I was going to say. And Hogan easily argued, you know, hey, you know that there's one persona that I have, but that's not the real me, you know, or there's a private life that I'm still at least afforded to when I'm in the privacy of my bedroom, you know. So that's the heels on which he prevailed, you know. It is a whopping lawsuit, but then you look at a lot of things that came out of this. We had, you know, the racial incident, the statements that were made.
Yes.
So he could say he lost a lot of money, and I think the jury kind of bought that argument, and that's why they kind of split it between actual damages, and then they're going to decide punitives on Monday. So he could probably get a lot more. So.
Yeah, Anthony Tall, there's a lot of things that are sketchy to me about this, and it seems to me that even the pretrial was set up somewhat in his favor. For instance, they desperately wanted the witness stand to address the conflicting accounts of who knew about the taping? I mean, it was Bubba, his wife, and, you know, and Hogan.
Right.
So who knew about that? And by the way, so the story goes allegedly that they had sex many times before this, consensual sex. It was just taped this time. Who taped it? Who leaked it? The racist comments, as you said, were not played during his sexual encounter with Cole. And was there an ulterior motive for the lawsuit? You know, who leaked the damn thing? And then the other thing that wasn't allowed to be exposed was the $5,000 settlement between Hogan and Bubba. I mean, you know, so don't you find that a little strange?
I do. And I think a lot of that, like you were just saying earlier, I think Gawker did a horrible job. You know, there was a whole bunch of reasons why this could have came out that they could have argued benefited Hogan. Who released it? And like you said, what's the value in it per se with him being a public official or celebrity, and the fact that he had sex with her several times and it was consensual, and Bubba is a public figure and a celebrity himself.
That's right.
You know, so there was all type of celebrity mixed with, you know, we wanted to be out there maybe to increase our brand, maybe to decrease our brand. Either way, we're going to go into court and get a whole bunch money. I think that's how Hogan handled it. And I think all of the questions you raise are accurate, but I think the jury this time just really wanted to send the message home, you know, that, hey, you know, we're gonna nail you if you go inside anyone's private life, you know, regardless of how public a figure they are.
Okay,
know?
Well, maybe eyes wide shut going into this, but eyes wide open now, the media is, because this is a direct, conflict with the First and Fourth Amendment. And, I think that this is a big eye-opener, and things are going to – don't you think with the media? I mean, this – when is Hulk Hogan Hulk Hogan?
Right. Now, that's a fair point. The problem with that is with the First Amendment is the First Amendment allows – the free speech up to a point. There's limitations on it, and one of those limitations is when you're trying to announce someone else's speech out in a public forum. What Gawker did in this case was they went out into a public forum and released a private sex tape. And me and you, we just discussed, don't get me wrong, we just discussed all of the issues after whether or not...
Yeah, who gave it to him, right, exactly.
Right, who gave it to him, but the idea that it occurred in a bedroom with Bubba's wife kind of sets the jury in a mindset of it was meant to be private. Now, if he had went out in the middle of Times Square, you know, and had sex with her, you know, then the First Amendment arguments become stronger. But you make a good point in the sense that the media, who is Hulk Hogan? You know, is he this guy who can say, oh, I'm this shy, his lawyer argued, oh, I'm this shy, you know, family man guy, and all the same, wow, even when he's having sex with this woman.
Yeah, then he's Terry Bola, right.
Yeah, he's Terry Boloff, and, you know, but still he's macho, and he's saying all these macho things, and, you know.
Racist things he was saying, allegedly, yes, in that tape. I don't think the race thing would have made any difference in this, but, I obviously my mother did not name me Drex when I dropped out of her and fell on my head, but if I go out and rob a bank, I guarantee you that they're going to say Drex robbed the bank. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Yes.
There's not going to be these two different people that you can say you are.
Right.
You know, at this time. You're going to go by what you're known as. He's known as Hulk Hogan. You know, not Terry.
I guess that's why I won. You know? Yeah. And so, you know, and I was talking to another Legal Eagle earlier, and she was telling me, don't expect the appeal to work because the appellate court really wants the jury decision usually to stand. Do you agree with that?
I do. I do. I don't think it'll stand in a case like the Aaron Andrews case, but I do think it'll stand in this case because the appellate courts are going to be really stringent on the ideal that his privacy was invaded. You know, and we've had a history of cases, or there's kind of like a legacy of cases coming down and against celebrities. You know, once you're a public figure, everything that's said about you is fair game. There's a high standard. You have to show what's called actual malice to prevail in a lawsuit against someone who just writes something that can be, you know, just off the cuff. But I think at this point in time where we're at, the courts want to put a little bit of limitation on it, so they'll probably uphold this. I do think so.
Wow. Okay. So Gawker won't be gawking in your bedroom anymore, needless to say. I appreciate your time, Anthony.
Yeah, no problem. And I think one last point. I do think Gawker will appeal, and I think in that appeal, they may get it reduced, but I think for the most part, it'll stand.
All right, Anthony Tall, sports agent and criminal defense attorney in Los Angeles and New York, and we'll link all his information at kgoradio.com. Thank you, sir, and have a great weekend.
You too, sir. Thank you.
Okay, all right, we're going to take a break. This is just astounding. And then, you know, what's crazy to me is, come on, he's in the courtroom. He was pouting at the end. What do you think he's doing now? Party! Yeah, oh my God. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. Joe Tobin's my guest, and we're going to hang out and have fun with the Late Night Late Show wrap-up coming up on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.